Bhaktivedanta Gita Sar. Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatmya, or glorification of the Gita. There it says that one should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. The example of clear understanding is there in Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna. For Arjuna heard the Gita directly from the Lord. If someone is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita in that line of disciplic succession, without motivated interpretation, then he or she surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and surpasses all other scriptures of the world. One will find in Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will also find things which are not to be found elsewhere. For that is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The topics discussed by Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, as described in the Mahabharata, form the basic principle for this great philosophy. It is understood that this philosophy evolved on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is a sacred place of pilgrimage from the immemorial time of the Vedic age. It was spoken by the Lord when he was present personally on this planet for the guidance of mankind. The second chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. In the second chapter, the Lord concludes his instruction on the immutable spirit soul, describing the immortal soul in various ways. And so Krishna establishes that the soul is immortal and that the body is temporary. Therefore, Arjuna, as a Kshatriya, should not abandon his duty out of fear that his grandfather and teacher, Bhishma and Drona, will die in the battle. So on the authority of Sri Krishna, one has to believe there is a soul different from the material body, not that there is no such thing as soul, nor that living symptoms develop at a certain stage of material maturity, resulting from the interaction of chemicals. Although the soul is immortal, violence is not encouraged. But at the time of war, it is not discouraged when there is actual need for it. That need for violence must be justified in terms of the sanction of the Lord and not capriciously. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has summarized the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita as being the contents for the whole text. In the Bhagavad Gita, the subject matters are Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. In the second chapter, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been clearly discussed. and a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga has also been given as the contents for the complete text. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, has very elaborately described the constitution of the soul in the second chapter previously, with a view to delivering his intimate friend Arjuna from the ocean of material grief. And the path of realization has been recommended: Buddhi Yoga, or Krishna Consciousness. Sometimes, Krishna consciousness is understood to be inertia, and one with such a misunderstanding often withdraws to a secluded place to become fully Krishna conscious by chanting the holy name of Krishna. But without being trained in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it is not advisable to chant the holy name of Krishna in a secluded place, where one may acquire only cheap adoration from the innocent public. Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness, or Buddhi Yoga, or intelligence in spiritual advancement of knowledge, as something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerity at a secluded place. In other words, Arjuna wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and thus questioned Krishna as to his best course of action. In answering, Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in the third chapter. Thus, the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directed to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without considering impersonal voidness as the ultimate end. In material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and desire for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, mind, and intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden. But by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and mind. And so, by steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity, this is the sum total of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculations and artificial attempts to control the senses by the so-called practice of yoga postures can never help a man toward spiritual life. One must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. To act in Krishna consciousness, one has to follow the leadership of authorized persons who are in a line of disciplic succession, as is explained in the fourth chapter. The system of Krishna consciousness was first narrated to the sun god. The sun god explained it to his son Manu, and Manu explained it to his son Ikshvaku. And the system is current on this earth from that very remote time. Therefore, one has to follow in the footsteps of previous authorities in the line of disciplic succession. Otherwise, even the most intelligent man will be bewildered regarding the standard actions of Krishna consciousness. For this reason, the Lord decided to instruct Arjuna in Krishna consciousness directly. And because of the direct instruction of the Lord to Arjuna, anyone who follows in the footsteps of Arjuna is certainly not bewildered. By Maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsmen was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of Bhagavad Gita is targeted towards this end, namely, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna. And one's sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called Maya. The living entities, as separate parts and parcels of the Supreme, have a purpose to fulfill. But having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies. Men, animals, demigods, 8,400,000 different kinds of bodies. And such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes liberated from illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master, and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. And when we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and thus knowledge is the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service. And when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he or she need not search for peace elsewhere. For one enjoys peace within oneself. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. And that is the last word in Bhagavad Gita. The yoga system instructed in the fourth chapter is called Sanatana Yoga, or eternal activities performed by the living entity. This yoga has two divisions of sacrificial actions. One is called sacrifice of one's material possession, and the other is called knowledge of the self. And that knowledge is pure spiritual activity. If sacrifice of one's material possessions is not dovetailed for spiritual realization, then such sacrifice becomes material. But one who performs such sacrifices with a spiritual objective, or in devotional service, makes a perfect sacrifice. And when we come to spiritual activities, we find that these are also divided into two, namely, understanding of one's own self, or one's constitutional position, and number two, the truth regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who follows the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is can very easily understand these two important divisions of spiritual knowledge. For such a person, There is no difficulty in obtaining perfect knowledge of the self as part and parcel of the Lord. For such understanding is beneficial, and such a person can easily understand the transcendental activities of the Lord. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, the transcendental activities of the Lord were discussed by the Supreme Lord Himself. One who does not understand the instructions of Bhagavad Gita is faithless and is to be considered misusing the fragmental independence awarded one by the Lord. But in spite of such instructions, one who does not understand the real nature of the Lord as the eternal, all-blissful, all-knowing personality of Godhead is certainly fool number one. Ignorance can be removed by gradual acceptance of the principles of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is awakened by different types of sacrifices. Sacrifices to demigods, to Brahman, in celibacy, in household life, in controlling the senses, in practicing mystic yoga, in penance, in foregoing material possessions, in studying the Vedas, and in partaking of the social institution called Varnashram Dharma. All of these are known as sacrifice, and all of them are based on regulated action. But within all these activities, the important factor is self-realization. And one who seeks that objective is the real student of Bhagavad Gita. But one who doubts the authority of Krishna falls back. One is therefore advised to study Bhagavad Gita or any scripture under a bona fide spiritual master with service and surrender. A bona fide spiritual master is in the disciplic succession from time eternal and does not deviate at all from the instructions of the Supreme Lord as were imparted millions of years ago to the Sun God, from whom the instructions of Bhagavad Gita have come down to the earthly kingdom. One should therefore follow the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is expressed in the Gita itself, and beware of self-interested persons who are after personal aggrandizement and who deviate others from the actual path. The Lord is definitely the Supreme Person, and His activities are transcendental. One who understands this is a liberated person from the very beginning of his or her study of Bhagavad Gita. In the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation. Devotional service is easier than the latter because, being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained, and how to get out of this material encagement by buddhi, yoga, or devotional service was also explained therein. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. While in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, for now he was situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work and devotion and non-action in knowledge, Krishna seems to have perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation and knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, Arjuna thinks that sannyas, or renunciation and knowledge, should be altogether free from all kinds of activity. But work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood that work in full knowledge is non-reactive and is therefore the same as non-action. Therefore, Arjuna inquires whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. After explaining the principles of liberation in the Supreme, the Lord gives instruction to Arjuna as to how one can come to that position by the practice of mysticism or yoga known as Ashtanga Yoga, which is divisible into an eightfold procedure called Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. In the sixth chapter, the subject of yoga is explicitly detailed. And at the end of the fifth, it is only preliminarily explained. One has to drive out the sense objects, such as sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. This is done by the pratyahara process in yoga. And then keep the vision of the eyes between the eyebrows and concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed eyelids. And there is no benefit in closing the eyes altogether. But then, there is every chance of falling asleep if the eyes are closed. Nor is there benefit in opening the eyes completely, because then there is the hazard of being attracted by sense objects. The breathing movement is restrained within the nostrils by neutralizing the in-moving and down and up-moving air within the body. By practice of such yoga, one is able to gain control over the senses, refrain from outward sense objects, and thus prepare oneself for liberation in the Supreme. This yoga process helps one become free from all kinds of fear and anger, and thus feel the presence of the Supersoul in the transcendental situation. In other words, Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of executing yoga principles. And all this will be thoroughly explained in the sixth chapter, which comes next. A Krishna conscious person, however, being always engaged in devotional service, does not risk losing his or her senses to some other engagement. For this is a better way of controlling the senses rather than by Ashtanga Yoga. The fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as predominator. Such work is non-different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is a path leading to bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute. And the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. One comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya. And that is the cause of the conditioned soul's many sufferings. As long as one is in contact with matter, one has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life, even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. Krishna consciousness is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more one is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is never partial toward anyone, but everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness. And these duties help one control the senses in every respect and thus conquer the influence of desire and anger. One who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage known as Brahma Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service. For devotional service alone can award peace to the human being. Krishna consciousness is the highest perfection of life. And in the sixth chapter, the Lord explains that the process of Eightfold Yoga system is a means to control the mind and senses. However, this is very difficult for people in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the Eightfold Yoga system is recommended in the sixth chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of Karma Yoga, or acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. Everyone acts in this world to maintain one's family and paraphernalia. But no one is working without some self-interest, some personal gratification, either concentrated or extended. And so the criteria of perfection is to act in Krishna consciousness and not with a view to enjoying the fruits of work. To act in Krishna consciousness is the duty of every living being, because everyone is constitutionally part and parcel of the Supreme. Just as the parts of the body work for the satisfaction of the whole body, and the limbs of the body do not act for self-satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the complete whole. And so similarly, the living entity who acts for satisfaction of the Supreme Whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it is clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma Jyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is the ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. But one who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. Thus, the Lord therefore says to Arjuna, "Hear from me, touch Srinu. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna. And therefore, by hearing from Krishna, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has to learn from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education."